Now, what we want to do, please, just to make this thing really work for us, is that while we're talking to you, we're going to talk about some things which are going to be quite personal, quite difficult to discuss in an open forum. And of course, if I ask you guys to ask those questions, you would just die. There'd just be no ways that you would ask those questions. Okay. So as we're going through these classes, whenever you've got a question that is really on your mind, something that's troubling you, just write it down. Just write it down. And what we'll do is you don't have to sign it. You don't have to put your name on it. We'll just put a little box or something in the corner there, and you can just put it in the box, and then we'll try and deal with some of those questions. Does that sound fair? Because, I mean, this thing's being recorded and terribly embarrassing, and just no ways will you guys, if I say, everyone understand? Yes, we understand. Any questions? No. All right. We've been to this movie before, huh? All right, so that's what we want you to do with that piece of paper. As we're going through this thing, today is quite an easy one. Tomorrow is quite easy. The next one after that, that's the one. So you make sure that you've got maybe 3 or 4 pencils, because you're going to have a lot of questions. All right, so yesterday we dealt with one session on courtship, the importance to get it right, get it into the right perspective, and that is, can you remember that last transparency that we put on? What was the sequence? Can anyone remember? Great. This is what I love. I love it when somebody says something. Great. What was it? Falling in love first. Marriage. And then have a healthy sex life. That was the way God had designed it. And we remember from yesterday's little study in Genesis that Shechem, remember, he got it all back to front. And Dinah decided she listened to the wrong voices, down with the ladies down at the local village. And of course, it was a bit of a disaster. Now, one of the things that Gwyneth and myself see in the Brotherhood in Christadelphia is that we spend a lot of time on this marriage and divorce thing. We spend hours and hours and hours patching up relationships that have gone wrong. We spend hours and hours and hours spending time on whether these people that are now divorced and applying to be remarried or refellowship in the meeting. Oh, it's just the most amazing. And it's like a cancer. Because once one couple falls away from the meeting, it doesn't only affect those two people. It affects their families and their families and their families. And I'm sure you all know what I'm talking about. You know that there are people that should be in the meeting that are not in the meeting because their relationships are broken up. And we spend a lot of time, and I believe a lot of time that we could put into better things than this whole divorce issue. So we have a motto in our marriage. Divorce is a swear word. We don't have it in our vocabulary. Even when I'm really mad at her, there's no ways I'll ever say, I'll divorce you. And I mean, sometimes she gets pretty mad at me, and there's no ways that she says, that's a swear word. We don't have that in our relationship. But we have to talk about the swear word because we've got to call a spade, not a gardening instrument, you understand? All right? Now, the most important decision that you will ever make in your lives is to give your life to Christ. There's no other decision in your life that is more important than that decision. And that's called a covenant. You're making a covenant with God. And a covenant, in many respects, is an agreement. You understand what God requires of you. God understands what He requires of you. And everyone knows exactly where they stand. And you say, yes, I believe this, or no, I don't believe this. And once you've believed, you are baptized into the saving name of Jesus. And that is a covenant. That is the most important covenant you will ever enter into in your life. That's the most important thing. There's no other thing that is more important than that. But the second most important covenant that you will enter into in your life, the second most important decision in your life, is to get married. Now, I know for some of you guys that sounds like a long way away. For some of you it's closer. We've got two gorgeous young people that are going to offer their services today. All right? And no laughing, huh? And then we've got some real oldies at the back there who've already done it. Okay? And then, of course, you've got the fuddy-duddies down here that are just, you think that we're history, But be that as it may. So we want to just do a little Bible study here on covenants. baptism and marriage, and we need to understand the importance of both. So what I'm suggesting to you very simply is that when you get married, and your heart is pumping, and you think you're just mad about him, you've got to make sure that you're mad about the right things about him. Okay? That you're not mad about his car, that you're not mad about, you know, because he's like the best rugby player in the team, or the ball player, whatever it is. That's not it. It's the way he thinks. It's the way he is, in terms of the way God sees him. That's the kind of thing we need to be looking for. We need to be looking at the potential, not what the person is now, but the potential of that particular person. Now, just when we met, I mean, like I said, I had long hair, I was still smoking dope, I had little round glasses. Remember those little John Lennon glasses? Remember them? Okay. Headphones in my car, listening to all the latest sounds, you know, and everything was groovy, and, you know, all the kind of latest lingo. But I was now in the way of truth. I was in the way of truth. I was just starting to study the Bible. And you can ask Gwyneth, I mean, if she had to say, this is it, if I was to marry, I mean, whew, terrible. You couldn't wish to marry a worse person, you know, than what I was. But she could see the potential because she had a Jehovah's Witness background. She was brought up as a Jehovah's Witness. So she had a good scriptural foundation. And she could see that I was on the right way. And on that basis, we had the potential. Do you understand what I'm saying? You do? So it's not what a man is, or rather not what a man was, but what a man is and what he can be. And that's what we need to be looking at. All right? Look for the right qualities in a person. All right, here are two scriptures which we want to look at. First of all, this covenant that was made in the flesh. God said unto Abraham, thou shalt keep my covenant, therefore, thou and thy seed, and thy seed after thee for many generations. This is my covenant which ye shall keep between me and you and thy seed after thee. Every man child among you shall be circumcised. So it's the covenant of circumcision in the Old Testament. And ye shall circumcise the flesh of your foreskin, and it shall be a token of the covenant betwixt me and you. Down in verse 13, and my covenant shall be in your flesh for an everlasting covenant. Very important that. A covenant of circumcision was a covenant in the flesh. We're going to be talking about that in marriage too. In marriage, sex is a covenant in the flesh. You get the parallels? Do you see what we're talking about? All right? So there it is. Circumcision was a covenant in the flesh. Verse 14, and the uncircumcised child, whose flesh of his foreskin is not circumcised, that soul shall be cut off from his people. He hath broken my covenant. So circumcision in the Old Testament was a covenant with God. In the New Testament, we find in Colossians chapter 2 and at verse 10, and ye are complete in him, which is the head of all principality and power, in whom ye are circumcised with a circumcision made without hands, in the putting off of the body of the sins of the flesh by the circumcision of Christ. So in the New Testament, baptism is an entering into the covenant. It is a cutting off of mortality, a cutting off of flesh. It's the death of flesh and the putting on of Christ. Do you understand that? Anybody not understand? You got it. It's incredible to be amongst geniuses. I love it. Whenever I'm just mumbling away and my wife says, who are you talking to? I say, I'm talking to myself. I only talk to intelligent people, you see. So I can understand you've got the same problem. All right, covenant of baptism and marriage. Deuteronomy 7 and at verse 4. We've got the covenant in the flesh, which is circumcision. And here, Deuteronomy and 7, reading from verse 2. And when the Lord thy God shall deliver them before thee, thou shalt smite them and utterly destroy them. Thou shalt make no covenant with them, nor show mercy. Is that how, do you spell show like that? Yeah, well, I don't either. That's why I kind of tripped over it. Verse 3. Neither shalt thou make marriages with them. Thy daughter thou shalt not give unto his son, nor his daughter shalt thou take unto thy son, for they will turn thee away, etc. And that's obviously the whole business of being unequally yoked. You must marry somebody who believes the same way as you do. Can two walk together except they be agreed? You'll find that in Amos chapter 3, verse 3. And I'll ask you that question later on. See, all you guys are getting a little bit glazed at the moment. So pop that one later on as a question. Amos 3, verse 3. Can two walk together except they be agreed? Okay. you're in Africa and you're walking up Africa. I can only explain from Africa. I don't even know where I am. This is like a foreign country. Huh? Walking up Africa, okay? One person's going to England, one person's going to Jerusalem. Or one person's going to Rome, one person's going to Jerusalem. You can walk together for a certain way, but sooner or later, you've got to part company. One's going to go that way, the other's going to go that way. So you must believe the same thing. You must have the same goals. If you don't have the same goals, you got problems. Okay? And now, Ezekiel 16 and at verse 8. Now when I passed before thee, and I looked upon thee, behold, thy time was the time of love, and I spread my skirt over thee. This is God speaking to Jerusalem. God speaking to the nation of Israel. And I covered thy nakedness, yea, and I swear unto thee, and I entered into a covenant with thee, saith the Lord God, and thou becamest mine. So baptism is a covenant. Circumcision is a covenant. That is a covenant in the flesh. Marriage is also a covenant in the flesh. So we see, therefore, that if you are to be interviewed for baptism, you should also be interviewed for marriage. And so what we do as Christadelphians, and I believe we have done you young people a great disservice by saying to you, well, you're both in the truth, so therefore get on with it. And we say to you, well, because you're in the truth, you're going to make it. And that's not true. It's not true simply because we have an incredible divorce rate in Christadelphia, within the brotherhood. We have people that are splitting and splitting and splitting. And of course, it's like a cancer. And it affects all of us, directly or indirectly. So what I'm suggesting very simply is that if we're going to take the covenant of baptism seriously, giving you an interview so that you know what you're letting yourself in for, and we know what we're letting ourselves in for when you apply for baptism, the same principle should be true of marriage. So there is a need to be interviewed here, as marriage is the second most important covenant after baptism. To fail here could jeopardize your future and even jeopardize your baptismal covenant. And that's also true. Quite often when you have a marriage split, when people start throwing stones at each other, and we have petrol bombs back home. Do you have that here, petrol bombs? Molotov cocktail, you have a bottle, you put petrol in it, and you put a little, you throw that out, you know, throw that around, burn the place down. And of course, that can interfere with your baptismal covenant. It makes it that much more difficult for you to keep face when you come back to the meeting. And of course, you see, one of the great problems, when you're in the truth, you understand the kind of responsibility that God has placed upon you. You need to be a living advertisement. You need to be setting the right example. And of course, when you have a fight, you get married, and you think that everything's going to run smoothly, and you start fighting and bickering about something, and you have a little problem, and you're too ashamed to go and speak to somebody about it. That's the problem. You're too ashamed. And of course, the problem is never really dealt with, and the problem gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger until all you have to do is pick up the pieces. There's no way of putting it together. But if we pick up those problems earlier on in a relationship, if you've spoken about them, if you've got them on the table, then of course it's easier to deal with those problems. And of course those problems then don't develop. So what I want to just talk about now is what we do back home, Wendeth and myself. When people come and ask to get married, we say, all right, we will marry you, but it's conditional. And that is that you have an interview. And this interview is a 5-part interview. It's 5 evenings that we spend together, sometimes longer, but not less than 5 evenings. And the condition is that when we have finished those interviews with you, and they're not really interviews, by the way, they're building a relationship between 4 people. So that when a couple stands before me, they are part of me. They're not just 2 faces in the crowd. They're not just number 693 and number 749. These are 2 brethren and sisters for whom Christ died. 2 brethren and sisters whom we have, over a period of time, become very close to and shared the problems that they're having in their relationship. There's no ways that you can have a relationship without problems. I'll tell you that for free. You must understand that. There is no way that you can have a relationship with a boy or a girl that you don't have problems. Simply because you are different. You have different views. You have different likes. You have different dislikes. You have a whole bunch of different things here and a whole bunch of different things here. And the things that you've got in common is that you've got the electricity, which we spoke about yesterday, that eros electricity, that sexual desire, that, all right? Then that draws you together and you learn about being friends. You learn about the things that, and you might have certain things in common. You might enjoy reading the Bible together, but you might have different points of view on certain issues in the Bible. That can create problems. You might both like hiking up out in the mountains or camping or coming to Bible school. You might enjoy perhaps one or two other things, going to restaurants or going to perhaps art galleries. Now, in the case of Wenneth and myself, I'm a designer. I'm a graphic designer. That's what I do for a living. Wendeth is a dress designer. So we're both designers, which means we're both kind of a little off-center. You understand? We're both right-brain children. And that's why I can't spell. I'm kind of semi-dyslexic. And if ever you see any of my spelling, well, you'll know. You just say, this guy's a lunatic. You know? But it's just because that I'm a little bit more developed on one side than the other. She makes up for it. I go and ask her how to spell Ecclesia. She also spells with two S's and two C's. So neither of us can spell. So if ever you get a letter from us, just don't pay attention to the spelling. Try and just read what we're trying to say. All right? All right, so we both, when we started off, we spoke about it yesterday, when we started off, we were both in the covenant, we both had the same faith, we were both designers, and we both had a physical attraction to one another. Well, a mine to her rather than hers to mine. That had to be developed, because I looked a bit like a lion. In fact, that was my Hebrew name, Ariyeh. Ariyeh is a lion in Hebrew. I've got very dry hair, you understand? So it doesn't grow. The guys that have got long hair, that's nice hair. You know, it kind of flows down in locks and looks quite nice. Mine kind of, you know, whenever I lit a joint, I had to kind of pull my hair right back like that just in case my head exploded. All right, so that's the kind of... But we had certain common denominators. There were certain common denominators. But we fought like cat and dog. That first year is really bad news. Let me tell you, we had a lot in common. We had the same kind of parental background, English mother, Afrikaans father. We were both the right age. We both had the same cultural thing. Everything, we had everything going for us. But we still used to fight like cat and dog. One of the things that we had a big fight about, which we're going to talk about later on, and that is Friday nights. You see, I was always used to Friday nights playing pool. You guys play pool? You know, you guys know how to do that? All right, so Friday nights was pool night with the boys. And then after pool, maybe a couple of games of arrows. Do you play arrows? Darts? All right? And then maybe a couple of pints of beer or whatever. And then get home around about 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning. A little bit kind of like that. That was the way, that's the way I was brought up. Friday night was, but of course when I got married, came Friday night, I was off to the door. And we said, where are you going? I said, well, Friday night, you know, Friday night. She said, so what? I said, well, it's the time for the evening with the boys, you know. I'm going to go and have a game of pool, throw a couple of arrows, you know, have a couple of pints. She said, no, you're not. I said, but you're telling me? You know, and I mean, I'd been doing this like all my life from the time that I could walk. But of course, that was the kind of difference we had, you see, and... It was a very difficult thing to solve. And that wasn't the only problem. There were lots of other problems. And of course, she was right. And I was wrong. And I had to learn that. That if I couldn't have fun with my wife and with my family, it wasn't fun at all. And try and remember that. If you can't have fun together, it's not fun. If you have to go somewhere else for your fun, it's not fun. It's really escaping. It's escaping your relationship. So what we do is we have this marriage guidance counseling that we do back home, and it's pre-marriage guidance counseling. And all we really need to be marriage guidance counselors is to be in the truth and to have a happy marriage. Don't have to have all these Dr. Spock books and things like that. 9 times out of 10, the people that give you marriage guidance counseling are divorced. You know, so they don't really have the credentials. So the credentials are to have a happy marriage in the truth. And that's it. So what I'm appealing to young people is that when you ultimately find your partner that you want to get married in the truth, ask for an interview. Ask to have counseling. My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge, and that's as true for our physical well-being as our natural, our spiritual well-being. You can't just think that sex education is not a thing to look at. It's a very important thing. You can't just put people together and think that they can get on with it. They have to be taught. And that's a very important thing. So we can't just take our progeny, our young people, and take them to the end of the cliff and say, all right, that's fine. Close the doors, get on with it, and pick up the pieces in 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 years' time. Because they've all got all these problems that they can't solve. And you think that you're unique because you've got those problems. You're not unique. Everyone's got those problems, but nobody wants to talk about them. That's the problem. Nobody wants to say, look, I've got this problem. I can't solve it. Please help me. And that's the kind of spirit that we're talking about. And of course, if you deal with these problems before they occur, if you see that there is an incompatibility between two people before they occur, they can start working on that. It's not a situation that is irresolved. It's not a problem that cannot be solved. It's a problem that can be solved because you can work at it together as a foursome, as four people. And of course, there has to be trust in that relationship. So I've got a little overhead projector slide here. I don't think you're going to be able to read it too well. You guys can't read it at the back there, can you? Huh? All right, I'll just read it through it because this is what we do. With a number of brethren and sisters in South Africa today or the United States or Canada, wherever it is vital to give guidance on the subject of marriage. There is a need to focus our attention on the building of happy and strong marriages and the bonds of the truth, and hopefully eliminate our misplaced focus on divorce and remarriage. That's the first point, and that's the motive. The second point is that when a brother is approached to perform a marriage between two baptized believers, and that needs to be stressed, because if we are to be Christadelphians and if we are in the truth, we cannot be unequally yoked. Do you know what that means? When I say yoked, I'm not talking about an egg. Yoke, I'm talking about things that go around cattle and oxen. It's a wooden thing that goes around here and there. And so you have to be yoked to get... Do you know what a yoke is? It's not making a funny either, huh? Somebody told me a funny yoke, you know? Do you say that, yeah? So it's essential to give good scriptural guidance and counseling. And the object is to guide and not to interfere. That's a very important part. All right. Three, we have a series of questions which I'm going to leave behind with some of the brethren here. A whole bunch of questions which we go through together as a foursome. And the questions are basically designed to just have discussion. For example, all right, we've got two people sitting here, just pretendedly at the moment. All right. How well do you think you know each other? How did you meet? What attracted you to him? What attracted you to her? And then, of course, people start talking about the fact that, you know, I liked the way he walked. I liked the way he smiled. I liked the way he, you know, had a fat wallet in the back pocket. Are you with me? And you speak about all the different things that you like about the person. And you open up a conversation, and it's very casual, and it's not awe-inspiring. It's not really an interview, you understand? We just... opening up a conversation so that we become part of this whole thing. And then we say, well, is there anything that you didn't like about him when you first met him? Well, I didn't like the way his breath smelled. What? Me? You know, do I have a smelly breath? Now, of course, now he might never have thought about that, but you see, in a low-key kind of conversation between four people who trust each other and love each other, that little thing becomes a non-issue, you see. All of a sudden it comes out in a quiet way. And of course he realizes that there's something that he needs to fix. It might be he might have smelly feet. He might just kind of rub the side of his nose all the time. He might just have something about him that annoys you. And that's quite natural. You can't love a whole person. There's always something about a person that's going to annoy you. And now's the time to actually bring it out. And of course, is there anything that you don't like about her? Well, she spends too much time putting on her face, going through this whole kind of rigor mortis or whatever it is, you know. What's it? Metamorphosis. Metamorphosis. Just correction there. Right? All right, so those are important things. And They can be dealt with in a love situation. So that later on, if that becomes a problem, you can deal with the problem because you already know what the problem is going to be. So dealing with the problem before it occurs is a wise thing to be able to do. So the other condition here, which is in four here, can you read that from the front? You can. Good. All right. Each session should be open and closed in prayer, etc. All five sessions should be completed well before the wedding invitations are set up. Now that's an important thing, very important, because what happens is that you come to me and say, "Brother Barry, I would really like for you to marry us," and I'll say, "Well, that's great," and we'd set up our first meeting together. And you say, "But you know, the wedding invitation's already been sent out." Well, what good is that? Because now what happens is that you're working under a pressure situation. And we had a situation back home where that occurred. There was one marriage counseling session given with another couple. And that couple said, "Listen, we advise that you spend more time on your relationship. Because there are a lot of things that you guys have still got to work out before you get married." And they said, "Sorry, but you know, the wedding invitations have already gone out." And of course, that marriage was a disaster. It lasted how many years, man? Lasted 6 years. Marriage lasted 6 years. And that sister was brought up in the truth. She was born in a Christadelphian family. Broke her father's heart, broke her mother's heart. And now she's living with another fella. And that's the kind of condition she found herself in. Because of that situation. So you need to be able to be sure that you go through this whole sequence, this little sequence of events, so that you're not pressurized. Because you see, once you've put the invitations out, you feel obliged to do that. And it's pride. And that's really where a great problem lies. In fact, we have another couple in South Africa who were married for 17 years, and they were also fell into the same category. They'd sent in fact, the couple had went to the father, Christadelphian father, who was an elder in the meeting. He was an arranging brother in the meeting. This goes back many, many years now. And they said, "Listen, we have decided that we can't get married because we're just not suitable." And the father said, "The invitations are out. You will get married." And that was a disaster. You've got a situation where two families are now living on completely opposite sides of the world. And they're not talking to each other either, which makes it even worse. And we need to avoid that kind of situation. We cannot let it go on. All right, so all five sessions should be completed well before the wedding invitations are sent out, so that if more time is needed for the couple to iron out any differences, they have the time therefore and will not be pressurized into something which may prove to be disastrous. Now the questions which we have here are based on the limited experience of the counselors. Now we've got a number of brethren and sisters back home, much the same kind of vintage as we are, with happy marriages in the truth. And we have passed these notes around to them and they've made their comments and they've used them and we've begun pooling our knowledge. And no doubt when we leave these notes behind with the various arranging brethren here in this part of the world, they will also have things which they want to put into these things or take out, because there might be things which are not pertinent to your particular situation here. For example, back home, we have a military service problem. Our young men, our young brothers go into alternative service for 6 years, which means that they get army pay for 6 years, which means that their wives have to support them for 6 years, which means that the wives can't be pregnant within the first 6 years. Are you with me? So we have that kind of problem back home. You don't have that kind of problem here right now. And that, of course, creates a great strain on a marriage and on a relationship.